everyone.
Hello.
We have returned.
Oh, yes. We're back, baby.
Big time back.
Oh, yeah.
And Benjamin is in a curious green lit. It looks like you're in a sort of witch's prison cell. But a sort of techno witch.
Yes.
Yeah, it's quite techno witch. I'm at the Edinburgh Festival, and so I've come to an actual recording studio where people record their actual bands.
What are we talking, Annie Lennox? What's, who might
have... The Proclaimers? Midge Ure?
Okay.
Rod Stewart, possibly.
Possibly. Your turn, Henry.
For what?
To name a Scottish artist.
I didn't realise it. Well, of course. Bannockburn Rogers.
Was Rabbi Burns' hype man? Was
that's
it?
Right, that's right. Yeah.
Well, Bannockburn was actually recording in this very studio only yesterday. You can tell by the stench of Scotch eggs.
That's right.
Which hasn't yet come out with the sound baffling.
Yeah. And he doesn't realise that they're not actually Scottish. They're called Scotch because the derivative of the word comes from the idea of scotching, i.e. to scotch a rumour, to hide something.
In meat.
And to hide your meat, effectively to hide your meat. Within a breadcrumbed sphere.
Yeah.
Don't tell him that.
I actually saw him live yesterday.
Oh, yeah. How was he?
Yeah. It was Bannockburn Rogers and the Bumhole Boys, which is his new backing band.
That's right. He's misjudged the times, hasn't he?
Which he keeps doing.
He keeps doing.
He's every decade.
Every decade.
He completely misjudged.
Slightly
the
wrong.
Times.
Well, very wrong.
Yeah. He was super fluffy and woke back in the 80s, and people didn't
that's
like
right.
it.
But that's why he can't come back in either, because he's always misjudging the. If he just stuck to one thing, it would have come back in again, but he always dodges the.
He keeps rebranding at the wrong moment.
He's always chasing that trend. For example, in the mid-2000s, he had the Madonna conical boob.
That's right. Yeah.
That's like 15, 20 years too late.
Oh, yes. It went down like a bucket of sick, I remember.
It really did.
Yeah. And then he then went for rhombus. He then went for...
rhombus codpiece.
And no one saw that coming. Because it's stick or twist, isn't it, in the music industry? And
He keeps twisting every time.
And the music industry isn't like an owl's head. You can't keep twisting. Isn't it? Isn't it? So he was in there last night. So are there the usual? Are there piss-filled ashtrays? That's one of his trademark. Also, I can tell you right now that his idea of making a combining the concept of a Scotch egg and the Zorb is not going to work. And that Scotch egg will be his fight. That will be his tomb. That Scotch egg Zorb.
Just a little pompadour for the listener.
Now it's time for Pompidou section. Pompidou.
We're recording in mid-August. This will be going out in the beginning of September.
We're still in holiday zone.
Logistical
reasons, we're doing an early record, which is why Ben is still at the pulsing heart of the fringe.
I'm aware that both of you have been on holiday.
Yeah.
Any updates from the continent? Breakfast ham-wise?
That ham look right to you? Breakfast ham was. I had variable breakfast hams. I went to Slovenia. It's one of the most beautiful places I've ever been.
Crikey.
Stayed in a few places. The second place the breakfast ham scene was second to none in the Socha Valley. The last place was near Lake Bled, sort of Rybno. And there was good breakfast hams, but I was slightly distracted by that thing where the very international Euro crowd. But I was aware there was only other one group of Brits there, which was quite a young couple in their 30s, who were absolute pricks. I had that thing, which I've definitely had before.
Embarrassed.
There aren't enough Brits to dilute it, but these ones are they are bringing shame upon the king. And and they were particularly making a scene at the breakfast because they didn't like the breakfast. Like, the man bollocked the guy because he claimed the pineapple was rotten. It wasn't rotten. It was just it was just very ripe and sweet. And there were some brown bits near the skin on the slices, which is a normal finding. And he bollocked a young Slovenian who had to go and basically give his pineapple a haircut and bring him a plate of pineapple.
So how did the Slovenian react? Was it, because I like it in a hotel where someone complains and then they sort of get counter bollocked by the person. I quite enjoy that.
This then happened, I think, later that morning. They checked in literally seconds after we checked in.
Hmm.
They arrived.
They probably assumed they were part of your family.
Yeah. And all we did was see them complain. They didn't like the food. Windy, 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 cross, 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 and treating people very poorly. I think it must have been after only one night. The woman of the couple went up to the front desk to complain about everything, saying that the food was inedible, even though there's like scores of euros, you know, going feasting upon the buffets, you know. And they'd obviously already had enough of this couple. And she said, "You're being very rude. I don't buy it. Your complaints are nonsense." And very much was like, "What are you going to do about it?"
Because
that bit of Lake Bled is booked up. Everyone in Europe knows about it. Like, what are you going to do about it?
Yes.
What are you going to do about it, baby? get stuffed.
Get stuffed, you Brexit bastards.
Yeah, totally told them to get stuffed, big time. Yeah.
Love it.
Lump it. Like it or lump it. And they lumped it. Loved it.
How quickly did you get like a twatty read off them?
In instant. So we had just checked in. I could add in something here that Henry may find offensive, but I don't know.
Oh.
There's a member of our party who is very good at, she can get the smallest scintilla of information about a person and she can find out everything about that person. It's quite a skill.
Do you mean she has access to Google? She's the one person in your family who you've allowed access to Google?
Correct.
How's that?
And my sister and I, we looked at this pair and we thought, these people are from Putney.
What? You just knew?
Did a bit of digging, and lo and behold, they are from Putney.
What?
God.
It was an absolute direct hit. Now, I apologise to people.
Colin and Sarah?
Colin and Sarah. It was Colin and Sarah. Now, listen, we may have listeners from Putney.
Bastard.
So I apologise if you are from Putney, but I will also say if you are from Putney, you do have a serious optics problem, and perhaps that's something you need to sort out.
So do you think there's like a Putney archetype then that you can pick up?
Yeah, big time. Yeah, big time.
And how would you characterise the Putney archetype?
It is that, well, the negative Putney archetype is sort of, it's kind of upper middle class to full posh. It's highly entitled.
I've just written down the word entitled while thinking about this.
It is passive aggressive.
They've spent time around horses. They've got photos of horses. They didn't necessarily own a horse, but this horse.
Correct.
There's horse stuff in their house. You go in, and there's either a horse or a section of a horse or a photo of a horse.
There are gilets. There's an excess of hair and skin treatments.
Okay.
There's a taut, tight manner. Younger, young to middle age, but were they of yesteryear and got into old age, they'd turn into Lady Bracknells, basically.
Eventually. Take that, Putney. If you're from Putney and want to stand up for Putney, do email in.
Feel free. And clearly I'm not saying that everyone from Putney, I mean, obviously if you're a Beans listener, you're from Putney, you probably won't fit into that type. But as I say, your borough has a reputational problem. I visited Castle Bled on Lake Bled. What I got excited about was I had a room of pipes.
Smoking pipe?
Yeah, because a woman some many years ago, when it became a sort of public museum visiting place, she was a great collector of pipes, and in her life had amassed a collection of 64 pipes.
Oh, not really enough for a museum, though.
No. That's,
not
that's
quite.
Almost one a year
one room.
In her lifetime. All very similar pipes as well. So it looks like she probably acquired them from the same place.
So she just bought a job lot of
she
pipes.
She might have just done it once on a quiet weekend, you know, when the kids were on Outward Bound. I don't know.
And then she bequeathed them to the nation?
Super Quiz into the Nation, specifically to Castle Bled. But it didn't have a lot of stuff. It wasn't like very tapestry, arty.
How they presented the pipes? Was each one of them stuck into a wax face?
Sadly, no. They did have some good wax figures of some Ostrogoths, but they didn't have normal the piping.
What's an Ostrogoth?
Just a glass case. It's a 6th century type of Goth that lived in that area.
Excellent.
At that time. 6th, 7th
century. What would you say is their vibe?
I would say try and have a nice old time farming, maybe inventing cottage cheese until someone comes along and slaughters them.
Yeah.
I think that was their vibe.
Okay.
Yeah. Did they invent cottage cheese?
I wouldn't say they invented cottage cheese, but they were into their cottage cheese in that area, I think, at that time.
So the canteen must have been lovely at the end of that, just a full cottage cheese
menu.
Cottage cheese and trout.
I think it was the Ostrogoth diet. Hay. Yeah.
Hay.
Mike, I think you could spearhead the Ostrogoth diet as a kind of weight loss thing. Mike Wozniak's Ostrogoth diet.
Ostrogoth you with Mike Wozniak.
Find your inner Ostrogoth.
Only 10,000 dead so far.
Mike did send us some very good photos to do with the breakfast buffet.
That was breakfast one. That was in Ljubljana itself. That was in a hotel on the outskirts of Ljubljana, rather than Ljubljana proper, where there were some very interesting meat pastes available. I didn't see them anywhere else. It was yeah, that hotel specifically, they were into there. They wanted meat to be pasted rather than sliced or roasted or whatever.
So it's like a sort of toothpaste tube of meat.
Yeah, but that didn't seem to be universally a Slovenian thing.
You might have been worried, though, on day one.
There was a moment of... There was a frisson of panic. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
How much chicken pate will I have to eat over the next 2 weeks?
You get used to it pretty quickly, actually. Yeah. And I'm already missing it. But it looked pretty sort of prion heavy.
Prion? What's a prion? Isn't that what gives you, like, mad cow disease?
Correct.
Well, it's stuff that... It's not even from the abattoir floor, is it?
It's properly complex, yeah, protein. Yeah.
It's complex is an incredibly euphemistic way of putting it.
Do your brain in.
It's anus and hoof.
It's basically, you might as well put an anus and a hoof in the middle of your brain. Yeah. See how you get on with the Sudoku. Yeah.
Well, of course, you will now be partially hoof, won't you, Mike? Yeah, yeah, the more of that stuff you eat.
Yeah. I don't mind it. I've had a good life, you know.
Yeah.
Throughout our lives, we're all building an internal brain hoof. But most people, it's so small that you can't even... Sort of get it on scans.
No, it's like a little sort of My Little Pony hoof. Yeah.
Whereas Mike's is now most of his brain.
Yeah, I'm a full goat, I'd say.
And that's the Ostrogoth diet. We just had a little coffee break, and then Mike casually told us that he crashed a van in Slovenia into a Czech man's car.
He was very nice about it.
Was he actually?
Jakob was delightful about it. I mean, it was, mercifully, it was in a car park. His car was parked.
Right.
I made a very ill-judged attempt to get our minivan into quite a narrow space and just sort of wedged the back of our van into his car, to the point where when he returned to it, he sort of had to kind of drive it into a bit of forest to free it from the clutches of our van.
Oh, dear God.
I pretty much welded into the side of his van. But he was extremely accommodating. The thing I was nervous about was the rental company. They tend to be unsympathetic about these things. But when I took it back to Ljubljana, lo and behold, who should be the person checking over the van but a clearly fantastically hungover 23-year-old man who, in the glaring sunshine, had very little interest in looking over the vehicle properly. And even though there was clearly quite a big... scratch down one side of the van, it was near one of the old blemishes that he had on his docket, and
perfect,
and just assumed everything was chinchilla.
But surely he's going to have to claim on his insurance against the car hire company, right?
We have come to an arrangement.
Oh, have you indeed? How much cottage cheese did he buy off him?
I have bought a year's supply of Czech cottage cheese.
How many free tour show tickets did you have to give him?
He wasn't interested in that.
That's a shame.
If he wants to bring hundreds of his family over to the gig in Glasgow, he can.
We do need to put some bums on those seats.
We could have an entire Slovenian sort of balcony. We could dedicate an entire balcony.
Yeah, we will have to get someone to do sort of Czech audio description for the show, but it's more than worth it.
Ostrogoth translator.
He was very nice about it, and we were in touch. He did slip in our communications that he'd been getting in from some advice from his dad, who was a former member of the Czechoslovakian police force.
When
it was Czechoslovakia, I think. And
so that's a threat.
But I think he already knew that I was putty in his hands, and he didn't sting me hard, and unless he's as we speak. Evacuating my bank account, I should check.
So did you just give him hard cash?
Basically, yeah.
I love a kind of man-to-man solution. We don't need the system. We don't need to trouble the insurance company about this.
The suits.
We don't need to trouble the suits. Just two mustachioed men, I'm guessing, in a Slovenian car park.
Yeah, with their mustachioed wives.
With their mustachioed wives and children. And I'm imagining if it was a Slovenian secret police car, his one would have had a large rotating mustache on top of it. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. So that's how you knew that it was secret police rather than official police.
That's how you know it's secret police. Because that's to dispel any radar. Isn't it? It's an anti-radar moustache. But what I love is, I love imagining this from your children's point of view, which is something about something's being solved. Daddy is solving something. Two men are in a car park and it's...
Daddy has boo-booed big
Daddy's
time.
Boo-booed.
The van doesn't normally make that noise when Uncle Phil parks it.
No.
What's going on? Something's changed.
Something's changed.
Why is it on an angle? And the car park surface is clearly flat. What's happening?
But there's something about that. So the handing over of, I'm picturing you counting out the reddies, the handing over of the reddies between these two men. Both of you have got your sleeves rolled up, I'm guessing.
Yeah, and our trouser legs, yeah.
you've both rolled up. Yeah. Everything that can be rolled
and
up has been
rolled
up.
The waists of our T-shirts.
Yeah. And it's about who can roll it. It's about who can roll those trouser legs up the highest without blinking, isn't it? That's how these things are. That's how these things are often settled. But
once you've got to full sort of Sporty Spice look, then you're good to go. You're good to begin negotiations. Yeah.
It's either going to be two men wrestling in a car park, or one man giving another man a fistful of notes in a car park.
All of the notes in his wallet. Yes,
all of the notes in his wallet,
and some of the cards.
And then it's a case of, darling, just turn the engine on, darling. Just turn the engine on. I think we're okay. Just turn the fucking engine on.
Is there any chicken patty in the glove box we can give him? I think I saved him from breakfast. Oh, I'd have been so stressed out, Mike. Because he didn't need to be nice. If he hadn't been nice,
he didn't
need to
be
so
nice.
Awful.
And I didn't, because he wasn't in the car when it happened, but I saw from his ticket that his ticket was going to run out in like 10 minutes. So there was this sort of 10 minutes or so of just waiting. But I had a good vibe from his car, because his car was like just an ordinary, like, Skoda, like sort of bit scruffy around the edges, full of stuff. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't. It wasn't like a kind of premium,
executive
Range Rover, ultra wax. Do you know what I mean? I wasn't going to be dealing with a sort of Dutch CEO.
Yeah,
you know right. I mean? Or a high up government official or anything.
No,
it's so probably someone a bit like you, or someone a bit just sort of on the edge
financially. and he was just so lovely.
Oh, that's nice,
Jacob.
How did your family feel when you were scraping the car up? How did you feel? Did you feel you're letting everyone down?
Largely unsympathetic. I would say. The children were unsympathetic.
Yeah.
My wife, the only thing she was worried about was that I would begin negotiations and still be wearing my kind of rainbow fun sunglasses that I have for holidays. And she thought that might give off the wrong message.
Well done.
So I was forced to take on the full glare of the sun. I think it was well judged, but I think Jakob would have been okay with it. They were later smashed. I don't know if it was deliberate or not. Look.
Are you wearing those?
Oh, my God. Yeah, they're quite fun, aren't they?
Hang on, Jakob punched you in the face, Mike. Those glasses are in three pieces.
Yeah, he punched me in the face. Of course he did. I didn't think it was worth mentioning. That's de rigueur. That's just before you bring in the sleeve rolling. It's just part of the ritual.
And yet you still think of him as a nice guy. He's really got you wrapped around his fucking little fist.
One of my closest friends, yes.
Mike, you need to stand up for yourself more. You need to stop being friends with people that punch you in car parks.
We can play the Patsy jingle.
Oh, no. Play the Patsy jingle.
Oh, hello there.
Welcome to the Patsy Zone.
And if you could just close your eyes and sign here, 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 and here.
Okay.
No, it's not two old bits of toenail shoved into a potato. It's a Bitcoin.
Oh, I see.
How do you know I'm actually from your bank? Well, if I wasn't, would I be asking for your bank details?
Of course. Take me to the cleaners.
Let's talk about car hire, guys. I've got a week coming up where I might go on holiday.
Oh, yeah?
Very nice.
Where might you go?
Well, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at different places. It's a long, long story. I booked a flight to Brazil in 2020.
Yeah.
Well, you booked a holiday 5 years in advance. Is that even possible?
I booked a holiday in the past.
Yes, I'm sorry, that's 5 years ago. Sorry, Henry. I think you might be using quite an old calendar.
Yeah. Your chicken pâté brain hoof is the stage now where you think it's 2015.
Okay, sorry.
I'm sorry to say the Queen is dead.
No! Well, as long as Philip Schofield's still broadcasting.
No, so I was meant to go to Brazil in 2020 and it didn't happen because of the pandemic.
Ah, yes.
For the Brazil Olympics?
In 2016. Which for you is happening next year. So makes sense that you're enjoying that and looking forward to it.
You were 4 years late for the Brazil Olympics. No wonder you didn't medal.
Well, it didn't go because there was a pandemic. So BA sent me a voucher for the value of the flight.
Oh, right.
That's the airline, not the character from the A-Team.
Yeah.
Yes.
We assume. Unless you were flying on Barracus Air.
The least likely character from the A-Team to start an airline.
You've got to conquer your fears by facing them head on, Ben. That's what the Ostrogoth diet is all about. Of course you're afraid of drinking a trout's milk, but that's why you need to do it.
It's your survival instinct kicking in.
So I got a voucher from BA for the value of the flight that they sent me in lieu of actually going on the flight.
Mm. But unfortunately, that's deteriorated because of inflation every year, is what you're saying?
Well, it has. But also, I'd forgotten about it, basically. So I got an email like a month ago going, by the way, you've got to use this by the end of September.
Ah, okay.
So I've been sort of gifted a little holiday.
It's quite fun in a way. Yeah. A little holiday in Brazil.
Well, I can't afford to go to Brazil now because of inflation and the fact that it's the middle of the holidays.
Okay.
So I was looking at various places. It's already expensive because it's August and it's BA, yes, which is like mad expensive for some reason.
Yeah.
And BA only takes you to certain sort of high-end locations, isn't it? It's quite a high-end airline.
And they're all quite expensive. And so I was trying to work out where I could afford to go and what to do. Mm.
And also, just in a bloody-minded way, even if you're literally just flying to, I don't know, Vienna and then flying back on the same day, if I know Bonjo, you will make that flight and you will cash in that voucher.
Well, exactly.
Even if it's extremely inconvenient. I'm not at all fun. You are not letting BA get one over on you. That's what I'm guessing.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's the mindset.
Yeah.
So I was looking at Puglia in Italy.
Oh, lovely. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
The old bread
basket. But I was cut off by the fact that I think it's the kind of place where you need to drive around it a bit.
Yes.
Like it's lots of small places.
Henry and I have been there. Yeah.
Ah, you went to a wedding, of course.
Well, Puglia is the boot. It's the boot of it. It's the boot.
Heel. It's the heel on the boot. Heel. Yeah.
It's the heel. Mm. It's the heel on the boot. Yeah.
But it feels like a sort of place you need to drive around, I think.
For sure, yes.
And then I thought about hiring a car, and then I thought...
Then you thought, in a way, BA are winning, because I'm then spending money out of my own pocket, even though they've spent money out of their pocket. BA are winning. Mm. And that is not what this spiteful holiday is about. This is a pure spite tour.
No, it's the red eye to Brindisi and then the red eye the following night back.
It's a double red eye. I'm going to take a sick bag.
And I will eat the contents of it. I will not be spending money on accommodation. I'll be sleeping rough.
In a recycling bin around the back of Brindisi Airport. Yes. Yeah.
And I will not have a check-in luggage. I will have hand luggage, which I will shit in. That'll show them.
So it's Bari is the place. Someone. Bari?
Yeah, Bari.
And
Bari?
Yeah. Bari is the place I'd be flying to.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, Bari.
But then I'm just put off by the idea of having to hire a car and then being worried about scratching it. And then that all this is so stressful to me that actually I was like, maybe I'm not even going to go.
I have usually crashed the hire car in some small way.
Yeah.
In fact, I think the only time I didn't crash the hire van, where were we? We were on Crete. But I picked up some stuff from a supermarket and was taken back to where we were staying. And people kept getting really in my grill for about a mile.
Literally, you were driving into people and they were getting stuck in the grill.
And the reason why people were getting so excited was because I was driving on the wrong side of the road back to the supermarket.
Oh, my God. Or were all of them driving on the wrong side of the road,
that's
Mike?
That's the imperial view, isn't it? But that
sometimes you've got to stand your ground.
That incident, which should have resulted in a fatality or like a write-off of the van, for some reason, that I don't know if I was my sensitivity was heightened. I didn't crash on that one, but I think every other time I've hired it, I've got myself into a. There's been a scrape, a pickle, a bump. It's just going to happen.
But also, I'm so stingy that I wouldn't go for that extra insurance thing.
Well, that's why I was in a panic in Slovenia, because my brother-in-law is he feels like that's like being upsold.
Yeah, that's how I feel. Yeah.
So he'll be like, no. So you're getting into like, suddenly it's in excess of £1,000. And it's, you know, and I thought, oh no.
So look, this is one of the few bits of adulthood that I've successfully embraced. Is getting my excess insurance sorted before I go on holiday.
What?
For some reason, that's... I've tried to filter out almost all practical knowledge, sort of, you know, nouse and that kind of thing. But this has somehow got through, which is I'm absolutely religious about getting my excess insurance sorted before I go on holiday. Because what they try and sell you in
they make you panic at the desk.
Car.
And it works on me. And if I'm with my brother-in-law, he'll take the lead because he knows.
Well, that's what brother-in-laws are for. That's what brother-in-laws are for, Mike. Yeah. But have you ever considered that you're actually a brother-in-law as well and you're fucking shit at it? You're also known as a dark brother-in-law. You're a sick inversion of the concept of a brother-in-law. You're the sort of arse indentation a brother-in-law makes in a sofa. That's you, yeah? With a moustache. Sorry.
No, completely fair. Absolutely fair.
No, it's fair. So, because I've had so many stressful moments. Car hire, Ben, I totally feel you.
Yeah.
That car hire is so stressful. There's so much stress attached to it that it's almost worth not going on holiday.
Yeah.
One incredibly stressful experience I had with car hire once was, I think it was in Italy, and it was going to the airport car hire place. You're hot. Mm-hmm. There's lots of other people queuing up.
Yeah.
And the other thing which happens in this situation is, if you've hired the car and bought your plane tickets through a third party.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a second party? Or through like
fifth party.
Through Sky's
There's no such thing as a second party. It always skips to third.
It skips to third, doesn't it?
Doesn't exist.
You're right.
Yeah.
Second party doesn't exist. So if you hire it through a third party like Skyscanner, mm-hmm. Opodo, Kayak, Globo Tossers, which is my name for all of these people.
Omnifuck.
Omnifuck. What happens is you're then in a series of phone calls, and I'm just getting sweaty thinking about it. You're trying to track down your car hire booking information to either, you know, to the people that have hired you the car, to talk to them, to try and talk to a human being, please. And you've got a series of reference numbers which don't fit the amount of numbers you need in the reference number. Because one of them's from the third party guy, one of them's from the fifth party guy, one of them's from the airline, one of them's from the car hire. And, you know, you're supposed to be having fun on holiday.
Yes.
And you're trapped in this kind of hot, Kafkaesque.
And after 7 hours of that, you'll be directed to physically talk to a human, but there'll be a 45-minute walk away in a reimagined shipping freight, the outskirts of the airport somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the person that can sort it out.
And actually, at that point, you're so stressed, you almost feel like I want to fall foul of the local mafia boss, be tied to a chair, and beaten to death. but even that's actually quite hard to organise.
Can I give our listeners a very genuine tip that I found out recently?
Oh, yes, please.
So I would always book hotels, and my way of finding hotels is Google Maps. Right.
Yes, nice. Okay, I like that.
I don't know if this is normal or not.
Okay.
I look at the town on Google Maps. I write the word hotel.
Yeah.
And they all pop up and they've got money, different money amounts on them.
Where there are sewage outlets and where there's, if there's likely to be like a fish market or anything which is going to, isn't it?
I'm looking for donkey butchers often. Yeah.
Looking for donkey butchers.
If it's out the back of a donkey butchers, that's perfect for me. Yeah, so obviously you're looking for a blend of decent reviews and good price and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All the ones you find on there, you click through and the good price isn't direct with the hotel. It's always through some other weird third-party website, which is called like eSleepers or, you know, Gigatwats or whatever.
That you hope is real, yes?
Yeah, exactly. But I've sort of found actually that they normally are real and whatever, and it's often quite good savings.
But also sometimes you go to Trustpilot, but when you're on Trustpilot, you'll have the thought, hang on a minute, what happens if I put Trustpilot into Trustpilot?
Who trusts the Trustpilot?
Who trusts the Trustpilot? And then if you put Trustpilot into Trustpilot and press return, you go back in time to the moment of your birth and you just have to start the whole fucking thing again.
Yeah. But you are condemned to review every service you use throughout your life. And that's how they get the reviews, basically.
Starting with your own mother's uterine opening. Is that offensive?
No.
No.
Well, it depends what your review was.
Well, I mean, if you're being generous, I'd call it cosy. But
also, you were delivered by cesarean section.
That's true, actually.
So, you know, you never had... Well, that's a fake review on Trustpilot.
Exactly. Untimely ripped.
Untimely ripped.
Anyway, so I'd go to weddings and things where you have to get a hotel, and just loads of times in a row, I was just in an always shit room. I was always next to the lift or next to the cleaning cupboard, and someone would be banging around there at 5 a.m.
Yeah.
Well, why was this happening?
Well, I looked into it. If you book through those third-party sites, they give you the worst room in the hotel on purpose.
No way.
Because they know you've paid the least of anyone in the hotel, so they put you in the problem room that they know... Yes. Every hotel's got a problem room that they know is crap.
So the solution to this, I'm guessing, is you turn up and you become the problem. You make louder bangs than anyone else. You piss everywhere. You play the banjo. Non-stop during the breakfast. Now I'm the fucking problem. You thought being next to you was the worst room in the hotel. Actually, no, it's being next to me.
You just have to know, if you get a cheaper rate through one of those third parties, you're going in the bad room.
You need to adjust your expectations. Okay.
Yeah, but I stopped doing it because they're always terrible rooms. Terrible, terrible. Because there's always one like cursed room in every hotel.
Yes.
Yes.
And it'll be next to like some kind of... the bin, or like there'll be like an air conditioning fan that's blowing the bin smell directly into the room.
There's always some active crime scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of weird how difficult it is, you know, for a hotel to actually sort of be a hotel. Like it's not that difficult in your own life normally to be in a room and sleep and stuff. It's
he's talking about buildings in like old cities that were never meant to be hotels half the time.
Yeah.
Right? It's those ones.
Yeah, yeah. You know? The mysterious screeching of plumbing, isn't it, in the middle of the night? The old, old plumbing.
I was once in a hotel in Poland where every room was, like, in the hotel was fine apart from ours, which was genuinely about 40 degrees centigrade at night.
Wait, it's so hard to regulate heat in hotels for some reason. I've had the experience so many times.
You just have to pour it into one room, don't
and,
you?
Yeah, and I went to the desk and I was like, it's so hot in there, like, can anything be done? And they just went, it is the hot pipe.
You're literally staying in the hot pipe.
Yeah. you're in the hot pipe.
I think basically all the hot water for the entire building had to go through my room, basically. So that's a genuine tip. And since I've stopped doing it, it has changed my life a bit. And I think that before I thought I was getting one over on the hotel, being like, ah, but I'm here for £49. But they know that and they are punishing you for it.
Yeah.
So you just have to pony up, basically.
Yes. So, yeah, you can't beat the system capitalism-wise, I think, Ben, in terms of that kind of thing.
No, that's what I've realised.
In terms of pay, if you pay less, you get less. Yeah. But except that's why one of the best experiences that can happen to a human being, I think, is being upgraded on holiday. Because that's one of the only times you get to truly beat the system in life.
That's never happened to me.
It's never happened to me. When does that happen?
It's not. It's happened to me a couple of times, not often.
And what, on a flight? A flight or a hotel or what?
I think when I walk into a place, there's a certain energy where the people think we can shuffle things around for him. we can move the Duke out of the presidential suite.
He's about to be deposed anyway.
Alfonso, look at me. We're going to shuffle things round for this one, okay? You get one chance as a Viennese hotelier. One chance.
We're moving the Duke, but the Duchess stays in the room.
We'll
discuss it with the Duke later. She'll understand.
She's probably orchestrated the whole thing.
Recently, I witnessed something on a plane that I thought was quite interesting. It was a long-distance plane flight. I was sat in normal seats. Mm-hmm. But I was in the bit for extra legroom, so I was in charge of the of emergency escapes.
You know, oh, that, God.
you know that one?
Yeah.
That seat.
Yeah.
So slightly more legroom.
There should be some screening for that.
There should be some basic screening. Yeah. It's almost like a panorama thing. We got Henry Packer into the seat. Welcome to Panorama. We got Henry Packer into the emergency seat on a British Airways flight. So anyway, I was in that seat. And next, there were two like teenage boy and girl, brother and sister, in the two seats next to me, right? By the way, one thing about those seats they don't tell you is, because there isn't a seat in front of you, you don't have a flip-down table.
Is it not okay. Ensconced within the armrest? Is it one of those?
But a table ensconced within the armrest.
Yeah.
But I couldn't get it out.
This is part of the screening. They should have seen that you couldn't get it out. And you should have been sent straight off the plane. This is the whole point of the ensconced tray table. That's what is puzzle number one. Puzzle two is, where's my telly? Yeah.
And what does he watch on that telly? Kung Fu Panda, you're off the plane.
You're mouthing all the words. Off.
The other thing they should have spotted was that I had both of my shoes on the wrong way round, but not left to right, back to front. Which is why I was very confused about which way I was facing. So, no, but genuinely, this is what happened, right? So that little debt that I was like, where's the fucking table?
Yeah.
And then I realized, oh, is it in there? And I was trying to get it out, right? The table thing, which is ensconced in the armrest, as Mike said. I was trying to get it out and I couldn't get it out. Mm. I became so embarrassed that I couldn't do it that I stopped trying. So essentially, when you look about the kind of character type you want to be in charge of the emergency door...
To operate a potentially complex lever in a crisis.
Complex lever, was it, with high stakes. I was so embarrassed that people would see that I couldn't get the thing out. Especially because the people next to me were two teenagers that had managed to get their desk out, the little table. I was so embarrassed that I thought, I'm just going to have to not get the table out for this 12-hour journey because I'm so embarrassed that I can't do it.
Or open the door if needs be. I'm sorry, it doesn't work, this one. There isn't a lever. Yeah, I'm sorry, everybody. Yeah.
Sorry.
We'll just have to float on the Atlantic until we get picked up by a cargo ship.
But actually, there was a point at which I was so embarrassed, I thought, actually, you know what, I could actually just open up that door on the left of me and get the fuck out of it. So anyway, but during this journey, these two teenagers, they were watching The Breakfast Club, I noticed, on one of their phones together.
Yeah. Mm.
And I had this real urge to go, oh, that's from my era, that's a good film. But I didn't.
You should have gone, no, see that guy there? Emilio Estevez. That's me, those.
Yeah. 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 I was like, would have been quite a good move. And just see what happened. I didn't know what would happen next, but just see what happens.
That would really colour the film, wouldn't it?
But if they believed me, and we had quite a long chat about it, this is what I'd do in that situation. I'd explain how I lost my hair quite soon after the filming of that film because of the stress of working alongside Judd Nelson. I hadn't let his lines properly, so I lost a lot of my hair very fast. My current accent isn't my real one. My accent in the film is the real one, actually.
This is my plain accent. So they trust me enough to sit next to the door.
Yeah. I haven't exactly lost weight since doing that film, but I have put on a I've put on a little bit of height, weirdly. Again, I think a lot of it's attributable to the stress of working alongside Judd Nelson, probably. And my other co-stars. But anyway, but yeah, I didn't like make a big deal of it. I'm currently on my way to London to pitch the idea of The Breakfast Club 2, or as I'm thinking of calling it, The Lunch Club, which follows on directly after the events of The Breakfast Club. Using CG.
That's it. That's the whole pitch.
Using CG while you ring rolls. That's the whole pitch, yeah. You know what I'd like to have done, Ben? Is convince them I was Emilio Estevez. Waited 20 minutes as they'd gone back to watching the film, then leaned over and pointed to the Judd Nelson character and gone, "Yeah, that Judd Nelson, that's me, that is." There's a brilliant Roald Dahl. It's like some short films that were like little things made out of from Roald Dahl stories. There's this guy, I've forgotten everything he does, but he is a guy.
He's a tortoise.
No, He's.
Is this the Twilight Zone-y one where there's like a goblin outside of the plane?
No. That's Twilight Zone. Yeah. This is one where it's something like there's this guy driving along with his, I think, wife maybe who's been attacked by someone.
This is edge of the seat stuff, this, Henry.
sorry.
I was about to say this is one of the worst retellings of a story I've ever heard.
But the genders could be the other way around, and they might not be married. It could be more of a sibling thing, or just friends. But they are driving along, and essentially, one of them has been attacked by someone, and they're driving along, and they look out the window. And they go, "That's the person that attacked me. That's the person that attacked me." And the guy goes, "Are you sure? Are you sure?" And they go, "Yeah." He stops the car, goes out, and I think just kills this guy, beats him up, kills him in an alley. Then gets back in the car. They keep driving, and then a few minutes later. They go, "Oh no, yeah, that's the guy that attacked me," to someone else. Uh-huh. And it's like, oh, this person now thinks everyone attacked them.
What's that got to do with you watching The Breakfast Club over the shoulder of some teenagers?
You know what? It would kill the mystery if I answered that. anyway, so sitting on this plane, what happened was, halfway through the journey, this woman appeared next to them, had come up from first class, and was chatting to them, and it was their mum.
Yeah.
Oh.
And, yeah.
So she'd relegated her children to economy.
She'd relegated. So I think what happened was, so the parents were in first class.
Yeah.
The kids were in normal.
But legroom normal.
As they call it in America. What's that?
But legroom normal.
But legroom, exactly. So that's why I made all this mental deductions. Yeah, they'd said, "Look, kids, you're young.
Yeah.
We're not young. We're going to give ourselves a really nice plane experience. You can
sit next to that man.
You can sit next to that man."
We think it might be Emilio Estevez. So.
He looks like a kind of. If you were to extrapolate Emilio Estevez in the Breakfast Club forwards in time,
add the phrase "gone to seed,"
gone really, really heavily to seed.
And maybe he's. Has glandular fever quite a lot somehow.
He looks like he's possibly only eaten carrots. Actually, there's no way Emilio Estevez could have become that sallow. It's not him. Yeah, so they'd follow them up. They'd go, you'll go in normal class, but we'll give you the seats with the legroom.
Yeah.
But what do you think of that? I could have thought, initially I thought it's a bit mean, then I thought actually it was fair enough probably. What do you think? As a kind of division of, I don't know, what they've done there in the family?
I think actually, yeah, my initial thought was like, that's a bit much, but, or that's a bit mean, whatever. But actually it's fine, isn't it? Because going on a plane as a teenager is really exciting anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah, they've got enough.
And they don't, I mean, they don't need it. I mean,
I get the impression that first class is a pretty wild experience. Do you know what I mean?
Is it like hedonism and like, is it just mad? Is it Last Days of Rome?
I don't think you want to expose a young mind to that.
It's the court of Louis XV.
I don't think anything's going to be good enough after.
That's a good point, Mike. That's a really good point. Yeah. Because I once went to business class. Oh, I was upgraded.
There you go. That's an upgrade story.
But it was because they'd messed up and we had to go on a different plane than the one they thought they were going to go on. So there were less seats than they're in economy than normal. So I got to go in business class.
Plus your kind of papyrus Habsburg passport is so huge, it does sort of draw attention to it, doesn't it?
It does, doesn't it?
Well, it's got so many royal seals on it.
Yeah.
But, it's quite heavy.
And it's a portrait. It's an oil portrait of you, isn't it? The photo in the style of Botticelli. So you're rising out of the sea, aren't you, on a clam?
It's also got a plaster death mask of Pope Julian, which is quite heavy.
Yeah, which is so hard to fake, isn't it?
Yeah, it gets tongues wagging behind the desk for sure.
Yeah. And actually, it wasn't business class. It was called something like premium economy. So it's like still economy, but just like a bit better.
Yeah, or there's no, that sometimes means there's a sort of free seat in the middle or something.
Yeah, it was so good.
I didn't like calling it premium economy. That makes it sound like it's more economy than economy. Do you know what I mean? This is premium economy.
But I think, it seems like there's like one extra inch of space, but that inch is the inch that matters.
That you're totally right, Mike. That was exactly it. It was like very, very slightly bigger. It was about 5% bigger in all ways, but for some reason it made 100% difference. It was like, it was fantastic.
Did you have a glass of champagne? Was it that kind of vibe?
No. Just some nuts, I think. It was good.
Oh, it's a nice feeling being upgraded.
Yeah. But you were spoiled from that point on, Ben. From that, I mean, you've had a taste of it, the high life.
My car hire thing recently in France, it actually went okay. I which is never a good thing for an anecdote, is it?
Was that it? Was that the whole anecdote?
Yeah, it actually went okay. Well, not all stories have to go badly.
Yeah, that's true.
It was a nice little Fiat. A lovely little Fiat. But I tell you what I fell foul of. Mm. So I used to be totally paranoid about it getting scratched because of the little tour they take you on where you look at it.
Yeah.
Mm. But this time, everything went fine, but I fell foul of, this is so basic, I fell foul of forgetting to refill the petrol. So that on the way to the airport at the end, I was like, I'll just keep driving and I'll find some petrol. I drove from Brittany to Hanover. But you always find yourself in a sort of petrol blind spot.
Petrol
You're
desert,
driving
yeah.
and driving and driving. There's no petrol anywhere. I eventually Googled like a supermarket. I'm trying to find this French town, asking directions
in Hanover
on the street. In Hanover. I'm in Hanover.
It's got to be a French. It's big enough. There's got to be a French town somewhere.
It's got to be a French town here somewhere. The history of Europe is so complex and interwoven. There's still got to be one French town here somewhere. System. I kind of assume there'll be a petrol station near the airport because of this.
Yeah. I would have had the same thought. Yeah.
And I think actually there was one, it turned out, as I drove back. There's certain things which I still find really hard to do. Like, how do you find a petrol station? I mean, how do you do that? Is there actually a way of doing that now? Using AI? How do you find a petrol station?
AI's up to it, I think, yeah.
Is it AI? How would you find a petrol station, Ben?
I'd use my old friend Google Maps.
But can you just write petrol station in Google Maps?
Yep.
And it'll come up with a petrol station.
In an airport, I'd use my old friend Perimeter Road and trust to luck, I think.
Let's face it, Mike, you'd get a brother-in-law to do it for you.
That's true. Yeah, come on. I'm just doing some myth-making. I'm trying to claw something back. It's absolutely nonsense.
Perimeter Road.
I'm shouting for Uncle Phil again.
Uncle Phil, the security geese have seen me.
I can't think straight with all the honking. I can't think.
Right, now what's happened is we've had a nice time talking about our holidays and holiday related anecdotes. And I think we have officially run out of time to do a topic. But we could still turn on the bin machine and give it a quick go.
Let's just do the topic but do it just like incredibly densely and expertly.
And efficiently.
Yeah, let's do it.
Right, let's turn on the bin machine.
Okay, yes, please.
Sam from Aurora has sent in the topic noodles.
Noodles.
It's a form of extrapolated rice. Thank you. And emails.
And I was listening to a podcast the other day where it was suggested that they might have come from Persia originally.
Okay. Let's read your emails.
Yes, please.
When you send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, this represents progress. Like a robot shoeing a horse.
Give me your horse.
My beautiful horse.
If you'd like to email us, you can email us on threebeansaladpod@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. Now, we'll start with one from Jacob.
Ooh, not Jakob.
Oh, is this a follow-up? That money you gave me was... It was Slovakian Monopoly money.
It was thin sheets of duck paste.
Jacob emails because we talked... So there was an episode that came out that was a Patreon episode, but we put it out to everyone, so everyone will or may have heard it, about Hans the Hedgehog.
Oh, yes.
In which Henry read us the story of Hans the Hedgehog, which was a Grimm's fairy tale. Mm-hmm. And during that episode, I talked about the fact that I'd been to a pub in Germany where the mascot of the pub was a fox with human boobs.
yeah.
And we talked a little bit about the ramifications of that.
Well, it's the perfect creature, isn't it? They've imagined the perfect creature.
So Jacob says, "Hi Beans, on the topic of sexy mascots with human boobs from your Hans the Hedgehog podcast, I present the bear from Mother Bear's Pizza in Bloomington, Indiana."
Okay.
Oh. Okay, so Mama Bear, I'm already seeing where this might be going.
It sounds like something else where they've started with the boobs and then, Oh, God.
Oh, that is, yeah. It's not okay, is it, for some reason?
It's a bit young, I think. I look at that bear and I see a student trying to make a bit of cash.
You don't see a weekends. Mama bear.
I don't see a mama bear. No, I see a student bear.
And by the way, Mike, does it soften it at all if I was to tell you that bears generally reach sexual maturity and start having cubs between the ages of 3 and 7?
At what age do they start working as wait staff in pizzerias? But they have gone for sexy bear, though, haven't they? That's it's a young, mature female bear. She has something of an hourglass figure, let's say. She's wearing a cinched red dress.
Quite low cut, I would say, around the
Yes, place. There's a full décolletage, and she's shiny of nose and shiny of eye, suggesting health, vitality, and fertility. And she's also able to carry a massive pizza with one hand, and she's smiling. She's having a great time.
She's also wearing heels.
Yeah, a short heel.
Red heels.
A short heel, but it's just giving a little bit of definition in the calves to accentuate the whole image.
Put it this way, I could imagine worse bears to hibernate with. Do you know what I mean? I've had to...
Which may be their motto. I don't know. Jacob is absolutely right. They have gone for sexy bear.
But I think, Mike, you're right. There's something... I don't like the way that... I feel this has been... assembled from... I'm giving you the illustrator's angle on this.
Ooh.
Pens.
Colour wheel. Pencils. The vanishing point.
Perspective.
The horizon.
Not technically a profession in the traditional sense.
Eraser.
Crayon.
Charcoal.
A view from the illustrator's chair.
With Henry Packer.
And I thought to myself, that beaver needs one thing. It's either a moustache or a bow tie. But it can't be both. But I was wrong.
The perspective on the bear's eyes and nose.
Yeah.
I feel like we're looking up at them, but we're looking down at the décolletage.
Yes. That's interesting.
What I feel that the image has been It's a kind of Frankenstein's illustration. They've taken bits from different... So essentially, I think they've taken a picture of a cute bear. It's a kind of cute bear face, which looks quite childlike, as you say. Yeah. They've taken that from like a kid's rucksack or a kid's pencil case or a kid's book.
Yeah.
And they've taken the logo from some sort of...
They've taken a picture off off a squaddie's wall.
Perhaps they were in a rush.
I think that's exactly it. And they've fused the two together. Yeah. And it's quite an uneasy relationship that the two veterans of the image have with each other. And then all of, you've got all of that going on, and then you're supposed to be in the mood to eat a pizza. So it's just quite confusing, isn't it?
Well, thank you for that, Jacob. And if anyone else lives near somewhere with a buxom animal mascot, mm-mm, then do send it in.
I think the effect it's trying to get is for you to feel... I think I want to have sex with a bear.
But maybe I'm just hungry.
It could just be that I'm hungry. I'm probably just hungry. Or it could be more along the lines of you discover things about yourself throughout life. Sure. Yeah. Change is the only permanent. I've never had sex with a bear. I've never thought I'd want, but it's possible that I want to have sex with a bear. Now, I can't have sex with a bear, as far as I understand legally.
It's not included in the rhyme, is it?
Which rhyme?
Which rhyme?
If it's black, fight back. If it's brown, lie down. If it's white, good night.
If it's got an exposed décolletage and a short red dress, eat a margarita. Yeah. So I think it's designed to confuse you and to think, well, yeah, I better have some pizza. Mm. In the meantime, while I work out what the hell is going on in my mind and whether I need to seek out chemical castration, which might be something they offer you in the restaurant as well. Which is ironic because I had Doughballs for the starter and then Nobles for the dessert.
Oh, God.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, lovely.
Oh, really God. By the way, that's a callback. That's a throwback to... What I always imagined chemical castration was, which is that you dip your testicles into a beaker of acid and they get completely singed off. That's why I genuinely always thought that's what it meant. Chemicals. The chemicals. Anyway.
Okay.
Gets you thinking, that logo, doesn't it?
As it turns out. Thanks, Jacob.
Caitlin has emailed. We have a section called Cured Meats of the Continent.
Yes.
In which people send in photos of their holiday breakfast hams from the breakfast buffets of Europe.
Yes, the summer may be over, but we'll always have those golden memories. The memories of the breakfast hams that we consumed. Whether German business traveller or Italian fun seeker, ham is always there for you at breakfast.
The Foreign Holiday Breakfast Buffet Ham Update.
Does that ham look right to you?
But Caitlin is from Western Massachusetts, so I think I can make an exception here, because I think this is a good submission to the canon.
Yeah.
It also has a relevance to a previous episode of ours.
West Massachusetts ham naive. So this is...
Yes. So I've sent that over.
Oh, good God.
Mike, explain what we're seeing there.
God almighty.
So in the foreground...
Jesus Christ.
In the foreground is a little card labelling the produce as ham salad, $8.49 per pound. They're selling it per pound. And behind it is a large yellow bowl with something that, at first glance, looks like a sort of a pile of dried out industrial adhesive, possibly.
I think you're being generous.
Or if perhaps a turkey was caught in the sort of outer blast range of a thermonuclear bomb. What was left from that? As the radiation ripped through it. Yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe if it had been repeatedly struck by lightning.
Yes. The smallest puff of wind, it would disintegrate into... Yeah.
I think it looks like something which I would... I think Rodney's Industrial Viscera,
yeah.
Which is a substance you could buy in the 70s, and a lot of, if you're making a 70s horror film, you just buy like two or three tons of Rodney's industrial viscera, because it's going to come in handy at some point in a horror film.
A little bit of food colouring, and it's whatever you want it to be. It's your spleen, it's your brain.
It's your spleen. It's a face being splattered across an elevator door. you tell the story. Rodney doesn't get involved in that. That's up to you. You have the imagination. He has the viscera.
Yeah, for only $8.49 a pound.
Yeah, so I guess the message I think from us is, Americans, please up your game when it comes to clam salad. What are you doing?
It doesn't have anything. It's completely pink. It's got nothing.
You can show me a picture of that without the label. You could give me 1,000 guesses. I would not get anywhere near ham salad.
No. You know, I'd have gone for 200 crab's brains that have been sat on. I'd have said that before I'd have said ham salad.
Yeah.
Thanks to everyone who signed up at our Patreon.
Yeah, thank you.
It's a good place to go. You can get video episodes, you get monthly bonus episodes, and then on the months when we're not doing our normal episodes, you get a new episode every week. There's lots of stuff on there. Go and check it out. Patreon.com/threebeansalad. And if you sign up at the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout out from Mike from the Sean Bean Lounge, where Mike was only last night.
You better believe I was.
And pretty exciting night, I guess, because it was...
Well, it was the revenge of Brian Ferry, wasn't it?
Indeed it was. Thank you, Henry. And here's my report.
It was the long-awaited revenge of Brian Ferry last night at the Sean Bean Lounge. While Brian Ferry's litany of grievances were directed at Sean Bean himself for a host of pranks, slanders and violations, it was agreed that the vengeance could target a series of hand-picked substitutes as Sean Bean was busy with a violin lesson. So it was that Rory Hancock, Jacqueline Hayes, Alice the Herbalist, and Charlie M lined up faithfully to be pelted with warm Northumbrian turds as payback for Sean Bean shaving off the eyebrows of everyone at Brian Ferry's record company in 1973. In 1982, Roxy Music were excited to learn they had sold out Wembley Arena for the first time, only to discover on the night that every single ticket had been purchased by Sean Bean and every seat bar one was taken up by a haddock. The final seat was occupied by Princess Michael of Kent, meaning Brian Ferry et al. Had to play the concert in full. To avenge this, Ralph Clapham, Marcus the Don Cano, Gary Niles, Ryan Jones and Harold Thalangi were forced to repeatedly offer to wash Tyson Fury's car while Tyson Fury wasn't in or near his car until Tyson Fury snapped and lashed out. In the cold snap of 2010, Sean Bean hid Brian Ferry's only radiator key, for which Kelly, Ellie C, David Stacey, Kathy and Blythe had to throw all their own shoes off a nearby motorway bridge. In 2015, Sean Bean finished off Brian Ferry's unattended Sudoku. The tit for that particular tat came in the form of Tracy Thompson, Helen Napoli, Charlie Coombs, John Mulaney, and Mikey P having to spend a year living and competing as full-time homing pigeons. While as retribution for Sean Bean telling the Warren Commission that Brian Ferry had been on the grassy knoll in Dallas on the 22nd of November 1963, Andy Ingalls, Mivanwi, Katie McGirt, Chris C and Rachel R were compelled to move to Derby permanently. Thanks all.
Okay, let's finish off the episode with a version of our theme tune sent in by one of you lot.
Yes, please.
This is from Chris. He writes, attached is a version of your theme tune, this time an homage to the classic 1970s crime action drama series, The Professionals.
Oh, yeah. Great stuff.
Being the chronicles of two young firebrands and their wizened leader, I've been a long-time listener to your podcast.
Okay, there's a switcheroo there. Who's the most wizened?
What does he mean there? I don't understand.
He's gone for a switcheroo.
Yeah.
I think maybe you don't know enough about The Professionals for this switcheroo to work.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Hopefully this theme captures the essence of your dynamic as the original did for Bodie, Doyle and Cowley in the TV show. I've never seen The Professionals, but I know the theme tune is a banger. So I'm looking forward to this one.
Brilliant.
Nice to be back, everyone.
Yes.
See you next week.
Thank you very much.
We'll fly out with this version of our theme tune. Here we go.
Thank you. Cheerio.
Bye. See you soon. Bye.